Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. It's coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll talk about seeking justice for victims of African autocrats. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54. Good afternoon, Vincent.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me.
You're very much welcome. Also joining us is regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas. Thank you very much for inviting me. Good evening, Vincent, also.
Good evening.
You're very much welcome. How is Durban?
Very fine. We are in for State of the Nation address.
How did it go?
It is still going on.
It's still going on. All right. We'll get the details later on after the program.
Oh,
well,
okay.
Tonight we are looking at giving justice to victims of African dictators. Now, as you know, Sudan's rulers have agreed to hand over ex-president Omar al-Bashir to the International Criminal Court, or ICC, to face genocide and war crime charges. Bashir is accused of serious crimes in a conflict that broke out in Darfur in 2003 and led to the deaths of almost 300,000 people. Authorities said the former president and others charged by the ICC should appear before the court. But there's no guarantee that it will happen. The generals may renegade on the deal. Bashir also refused to recognize the authority of the court when he was charged for crimes in the region in 2009. And on Tuesday, one of his lawyers told Reuters news agency that Bashir would continue to refuse to deal with the ICC, describing it as a political court. So, gentlemen, let's start. Where do we start?
Yeah.
So, will supporters, first of all, will the supporters of the of Bashir accept this decision?
Of course they will not. And we've seen some protests on the streets of Khartoum. You know that those who support him, along with a number of African leaders, consider the ICC an illegitimate court because they feel it targets Africans. And therefore, they support Bashir in his refusal to cooperate with it. His lawyers actually says they will not cooperate with it. But we know that the transitional government is under so much pressure. Mm-hmm. They're very concerned about being in the list of, terrorism list, and they want to be dropped from there so that they can get the very necessary finances that they need from the international community and also military support. Now, one wonders, is this something, this promise they made, is it something they will deliver on soon enough? Or was this supposed to just pacify the international community so that they can start getting necessary foreign aid, just to kind of creating a goodwill by making that promise, but without specifics on when this will be done and if it can actually be carried out? Because what do we expect? Are we going to see the transitional government actually going, arresting or rather transferring Bashir from where they're holding him now to The Hague? Will they do that? Do they realistically plan to take everybody that has been accused to The Hague? So it only time will tell, but for now you feel that perhaps under pressure they just want to try and make a gesture, some kind of a gesture to the international community so that hopefully they can start getting the money.
Suleiman, do you share the same opinion?
Yes, it is a gesture, but whatever it is, I think it is a milestone, not only for the people of Sudan, but for the people of Africa too. These dictators on the continent, I think, they need to be taught a lesson, because it has been a continuous process of people being abused, people being killed by our leaders, but nothing being done. As you are well aware, Douglas, that there is a line of African leaders, from Mengistu Haile Mariam of Ethiopia, Sen Habre of Chad. Then we have got the Abachas. We have got the Dadis Camaras of Guinea. I mean, it is a line of them who come and kill thousands and thousands, even some of them sitting ones. We have had DRC people, almost 4 million dead because of leadership. We have got in Rwanda, we have got in Uganda 1.5 million people dead at the hands of a leader like Museveni. We have got Southern Sudan, people are still perishing because of the leaders who are currently in leadership. So I think until when these people are taken, whether lately or not, but until when they are taken to these courts and they face justice, Africa will not change. So I think it is a milestone. Yes, the process might be slow. It might take some time. But so long as they are surrounded up the way Bagbo was taken, the way others were taken, so long as they are taken there and they face justice, no matter what comes, it will be a positive side as far as the African people are concerned.
I see. You see, Vincent and Suleiman, that's the point. That leads us to the point where most analysts are saying the AU, for instance, AU has had a stand. Bashir was shielded by the African Union. The leaders didn't want to cooperate, and some have argued that maybe it was in their best interest. They feared to set a precedent. So do you think, how much cooperation can the ICC get from the African leaders today?
Not much. Remember that the African leaders think about themselves and always are concerned about any actions they take, how it will impact them in the future. That is why they're always hesitant to criticize one of their own. That's why they are normally protective of each other. Whenever one of them does something, you can run to the neighboring country and be protected there. He has just mentioned Mengistu, who has been living in exile for years and years. Yes. Nobody's sending him anywhere. He's in Abra and all. But what I think here is also another critical thing that everybody has to think about is that the guys that are promising to send al-Bashir to The Hague are also complicit.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking about Abdullah Hamdok, who's the prime minister, who was a big shot.
Yes.
In fact, I think is perhaps a commander.
Yes.
During those operations there. Mm. So if Bashir goes to The Hague, there is a possibility that some of those people would be called upon,
yes,
either to testify, to exonerate themselves. And of course, they could sacrifice,
okay,
Bashir and say he made the call. Mm. But then the case becomes very murky because Bashir did not execute the orders. He may have ordered, but the atrocities were perpetrated by the soldiers on the ground, including the commanders that were working for him. This government, remember, half of it is a military, composed of the military, and that military is part and parcel of al-Bashir.
Yes.
Now, if they expose al-Bashir, they have to essentially expose themselves, and they have to be willing to have their dirty linen washed and hanged in the open.
Yeah, including their crimes. Suleiman, given the even within the neighborhood of Sudan itself, there are people like you mentioned, Museveni, you mentioned Kagame, people in the region there, the leadership in the region, are cagey about ICC and because they are not very clean themselves.
For sure, as far as the AU is concerned, they are not very, they are not enthusiastic about the whole thing, because many of them, they would face the same music if things were to turn around, because many of them have been, the impunity on the continent has been so much. I mean, one would not be surprised if Mugabe would not release Mengistu, because even he himself was a murderer. He was killing people. So you go to Burundi, Nkurunziza has killed. Now he's retiring. Not only that, even in East Africa, many of our people, even to talk about Arap Moi. Arap Moi did a lot of things, but so many people died under his control. People like Robert Ouko died and others. And things just move on. And then later on, he retires, and then people don't get justice. Whereas these are broad day murders, they are real cruel abuse of people's rights. So I think, in whatever way, the process itself is very difficult. When Kenyatta and Ruto, sitting president, was invited, he made it so difficult for the evidence to be gathered against him. The case of Gbagbo was also very difficult. Even this one of Southern of Sudan will be very difficult. But for me, I feel that at least the gesture itself of taking them to face justice, maybe slowly by slowly, those who are in power can start changing their minds and start respecting people's rights.
And I think, Douglas, one of the things that comes out of this, perhaps is a good lesson to the rest of the world, mostly, is that the only way that some of the African leaders could be held accountable is external pressure. Because some of these leaders have received a lot of support from, Western powers during their time. And so when things go terrible and these men either are out of power or they become extreme in their actions, it has proved up to this point that the African countries themselves cannot hold these leaders accountable. They don't have the capacity. The Africa Union does not have the willingness or the structures to hold accountable a leader from another African country. What we are seeing in Sudan is that the external pressure, not from Africa, external as in the West and the rest of the world, is forcing the Sudanese administration at the moment to take action, whether it is just a gesture or whichever way we may look at it. The Sudanese leadership did not sit down and suddenly realize how atrocious the Bashir's leadership had been and therefore decide to willingly carry out the request of the ICC. No, it is the pressure. And the pressure is that if you cannot deliver this guy, as part of this peace deal they're trying to get together with the rebels, you will not get funds from outside. You probably will be in a situation where your government is weaker because you do not have the capacity, and therefore you may face another revolution. So it's a lesson that the West and other countries that have a vested interest in peace and human rights should exert pressure, and they have the capacity to actually force the hand of African nations to do the right thing, especially where bad leadership, ruthless dictatorship has caused so much suffering on the people of their own countries.
And this one is not a difficult thing with the pressure from the international community and even with other human rights organizations. Remember that in 2013, Senegal had to agreed to the special tribunal created by the African Union, but also with the pressure of the international community. The hybrid court which tried the Senegal was also partly funded by the EU. The EU also accepted because there was international pressure. So as the continent struggles to replace these rogue leaders on the continent and we get fresh leaders like young people like those ones in Ethiopia, if they become more, the one in DRC, if they become more and we get people to join Ghana, to join Senegal, to join Mauritius, to join those countries which have got good leaders, I think with these lessons and pressures going on, I think to a certain extent, we can begin to change the continent. Otherwise, without lessons, we may not be able to change the continent because some of these local leaders, they are continuing to kill people. I mean, look at Uganda. The president recently just went into one of the districts and just massacred 100 people, innocent civilians, and he kept on and life is still continuing. In southern Sudan, people are still dying innocently because of leadership. So there is a need to teach them a lesson. Much as we may not succeed, but we should show them that, especially the international organizations, should show the continent that they are not sleeping, they are watching them, and they are seeing what they are doing. And maybe one time, it's a question of time, their time will come.
I see. Now, we're going to take a short break, and when we shall come back to continue our discussion of the justice for victims of African dictators. But today, listeners, is World Radio Day. Listen to this message from the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, on this World Radio Day.
Radio brings people together. In an era of rapid media evolution, radio retains a special place in every community as an accessible source of vital news and information. But radio is also a source of innovation that pioneered interaction with audiences and user-generated content decades before they became mainstream. Radio offers a wonderful display of diversity in its formats, in its languages, and among radio professionals themselves. This sends an important message to the world. As we strive to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals and tackle the climate crisis, radio has a key role to play as a source of information and inspiration alike. On this World Radio Day, let us recognize the enduring power of radio to promote diversity and help build a more peaceful and inclusive world.
Welcome back and a happy World Radio Day. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight we are discussing holding Africa's autocrats to account. Our panelists are my colleague Vincent Macquarie and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. And I'm your host Douglas Mpoga here in Studio One in Washington. Gentlemen, mm-hmm. Both of you alluded to the international pressure, external yeah. pressure that can help. Yeah. And we hadn't quite exhausted that issue. Some people point out that international pressure is applied selectively.
Yes.
You get a man like Gaddafi, you kill him, you change things. You get a guy who massacres people, since so long as he's playing a double game and he pleases the West, he keeps in power. And then nothing happens.
Yeah.
So for as long as there's no standard for, can it work?
But first, let me say this. If it was my wish, if it was within my powers, I would not want that the external pressure is the solution to Africa's problems.
Yes.
I would love to see responsible leadership. Mm. I would love to be... in a country, I would love to see our countries being able to hold leadership accountable and therefore not have a necessity of calling for outside help. You know, it feels bad, even for us, even those of us sitting here in the West, to be saying that the West should go into our countries and bring order because it speaks to a certain level of immaturity, a sense of irresponsibility, which is embarrassing. Mm. It is not something we say with so much delight. It's not something that we feel good about having to... It isn't dignifying for us to say that we need somebody from outside to come and fix our affairs. Mm. Mm. So if it was... my will. If I had the ability, I would wish Africa to have the structures that will help the continent to have a sense of self-accountability, to have some sense of justice structures whereby citizens of Africa don't have to cry out to the rest of the world for justice. But unfortunately, it does not exist. Unfortunately, we are left in a situation where you feel that the only way that some of the things may be fixed is through external pressure. But as you say, we have to realize that every country is looking out for its own national interest. Mm. And therefore, if it is not in the national interest of the Western countries to intervene in what's going on in Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, wherever, they will not go in. Mm-hmm. They will not exert that pressure. Mm-hmm. So it will never be the solution. Ideally, the African countries have to figure out how to become grown-up countries, how to be mature, how to hold themselves accountable and be a continent that citizens of those countries might be proud of, but also, even more importantly, countries that can be respected by the West. We feel embarrassed when we hear how the people from the rest of the world speak about Africa.
Yes.
You know, we wouldn't want that. We come from there, so we hope... African leaders could do something that would change that perspective of the continent.
Yeah, Suleiman, in further to that, this duplicity and double standards, the African on the African continent, they decried coups on the continent, but then Al-Sisi takes power through a coup, and then nobody gives a damn. They even became chairman of the AU, and the West doesn't even complain.
Exactly. And in addition, first with what Vincent is saying, it is so painful to us and so shameful for us to discuss in the 21st century of a leader who has been appointed, who has been elected, or who has taken responsibility to govern a country, to turn around and unleash violence on his unarmed population which he's supposed to protect, and then he continues to sit in the chair and enjoy himself. It is shameful that such a leader organizes special forces to guard him, goes to the best hospitals in Europe, ensure that his family is safe and well, and then unleashes violence and kills innocent people. What type of people are we? As Africans, intellectually, we cannot measure ourselves to be lower than other races. Really, we can have very good leaders. It has happened in some of the African countries. Here in South Africa, we have had difficult times, but we have sat down and sorted out. We have had leaders like Mandela with humility. Before the advent before the new South Africa, violence broke out black in South Africa here. ANC and one of the parties in Kata Freedom parties led by Chief Mangosuthu Buthelezi, they started slaughtering one another. Mm. But Mandela had the humility to stretch his hand. He had the humility to sit down with the other, and then they settle it for once and for all. Up to today in South Africa, there is no systematic political killing by government institutions. You cannot see a soldier, you cannot see a policeman pointing a gun to the to unarmed civilian because he has been instructed or because he's protecting a politician. Why should it happen on the continent? It is so shameful. So even the international community needs to help us, not to leave others to do as they want, and then the others, they are so tough on them. If it is Mugabe, they will be so tough. If it is Museveni, he can do whatever he wants. If it is Salva Kiir, he can do whatever he wants. And the most people, I think, as you said, there needs to be a standard where these people are held to account, regardless of who he is, whether he's protecting your interests in violence or whatever. But there should be a standard that a human life, an African life also, has got the same value as the life in Europe. So one life lost is a life too many. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think we also have to be realistic about each country. I always say each country is looking out for its national interest, and therefore the citizens of another country realistically come second. They, in some cases, the citizens of another country could be collateral damage if their deaths or their suffering serves the external interest of a particular country in the West. And that is why African countries have to really rise above this. They have to go beyond this terrible history where leaders have treated their own citizens like pests. They've treated them like enemies, you know. The people give you the great privilege, this great honor of being the leader of the entire country. Then you turn around and treat these people like they're your enemies, that they cannot question what you do, that they cannot go on the streets and protest against some of the excesses of your government, that you can actually kill them. What this leads to is also fatigue in the West. I mean, if you imagine, in how many countries can other countries intervene? If the West said today it wants to intervene in every country in Africa where there's bad leadership, They won't have time.
Mm.
They won't have the resources.
I see.
So that is another problem.
Now, before as I was preparing for this program, I talked to some analysts who told me that the only solution, okay, there's a simple solution to all this, how to hold these people accountable. If the continent resolved to enforce term limits, they would make ICC irrelevant because somebody's term would run out, and if he's committed atrocities, his own country, they would try him, the next government would try him. So I want to pick your thoughts briefly, starting with you, Suleiman. Would that work?
Definitely. All the problems are caused by poor leadership. And poor leadership, one of the cornerstones of poor leadership is overstaying in power. The moment a leader goes beyond 10 years, he becomes a problem. He becomes a problem himself. That is where he starts going back and killing people recklessly because we want to defend himself. So if we can find a way to stop that selfishness, that insensitivity, that greed for power, if it can stop, if the impunity can be stopped, then we won't have those problems.
Mm-hmm.
But lastly, what I can say is that the president of South Africa has just taken over the chairmanship of the AU and he has promised his tenure to be the one to silence guns. Let us hope that apart from silencing guns, he would also be talking to other leaders to change their ways and start living like responsible people.
So if I may also chime in on that, yes, as my brother Mahula is saying there, indeed, overstaying in power is really what brings about abuse of power.
Yeah.
Because once somebody stays in power too long, they start believing that the country is their personal property.
And they commit mistakes.
Exactly, and that being the president of their country is a right, is a birthright.
Mm.
But if you had true democracy and term limits, especially term limits, and then, of course, pluralism, where there are other parties that will be vying for this, it will make those leaders strive to do their best. You will consider this. In the first term, the elected person probably will try to do their best so that they can be re-elected for a second term.
Yes.
So they're likely to be busy trying to impress everybody.
Yes.
When they get to the second term, they will be under pressure from their own party to do a good job so that their party can win the election the next time and also that they can have a legacy to be remembered for.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start trying to do some things which will make them be remembered.
Mm.
It is easier to resolve some of those problems that we are experiencing today with term limits. That is, there's no question about it.
Okay, finally, prediction. Do you think Bashir will end up in The Hague?
You know what? I think with sufficient pressure, those guys in Khartoum will be willing to sacrifice Bashir. They will probably send him, but if the pressure is sustained from now on.
Mm. Yeah. Suleiman, your prediction.
There is internal pressure. The civil society in Sudan has not yet it is not resting. There is internal pressure, there is external pressure. So most likely he will be sent, but the only problem is that to convict them is not easy because they have got a lot of roots within the country they have led.
And they, of course, they are sabotaging the evidence and the
witnesses. The weakness of the ICC is their system. I'm not a lawyer there, but the way they collect their evidence and try to get their witnesses, many times the case gets very weak.
I see.
That's a problem.
Well, we're out of time, and that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Macori, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, producer tonight was Dan Brown, and our engineer was Nelson Lopez. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website, click on Programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, wishing you all the best.
This is VOA News.